I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last week, Vermont Governor Phil Scott faced a crowd of supporters and detractors and talked about why he was about to sign three significant bills adding restrictions to Vermont's laws related to firearms. Vermont has long had some of the least restrictive laws in the nation, but it is among the first to tighten up laws since the shooting in Parkland, Florida on Valentine's Day. Before signing the bills, Scott reflected on how the morning of February 16th, when he was in his office, everything changed, and he learned of the detailed plans of an alleged plot to shoot up Fairhaven Union High School.
I was alarmed to learn just how close we came to the same tragic fate the people of Parkland faced. I thought, as the safest state in the nation, Vermont was immune to this type of violence. The reality of how close we came to a tragedy like Florida forced me to do some soul searching. I support the Second Amendment, but I had to ask myself, are we truly doing everything we can to make our kids and our communities safe? Because if we're at a point where our kids are afraid to go to school and parents are afraid to put them on a bus, then who have we become? The answers to those critical questions forced me to reconsider and, after deep reflection, change some of my own views.
You can hear the emotion there at the signing ceremony. There are now three bills that have gotten the governor's signature, and today on Vermont Edition, we're going to get reactions to the passage of these new restrictions and regulations. We would love to hear from you. Do you feel like this will affect you at all? Do you think that it will be effective laws? And do you think that this is something that will stand up to a challenge, a legal challenge, which is surely to come? John says, I don't think the laws go far enough, but that's not Vermont's fault. The big three of gun violence are suicide, domestic violence, and criminal violence, mass shootings at school and otherwise, while horrendous and visible, don't actually cause as much death or injury. How can we lower the body count? By stopping the flow of guns to people who use them inappropriately. These bills are a good start for domestic gun violence, but how do we stop that? How do we reduce criminal violence? By interrupting the pipeline of weapons to criminals. All firearms transfers need to be documented nationally. Rich says, I think the magazine limit is too far. Initially, I was against increasing the age limit to 21, but I've come around to it. Red flag laws are appropriate as long as they are not administrated arbitrarily and can be challenged quickly. And David in Fairfax says, universal background checks will be ineffective. It was already a federal crime for a prohibited person to possess a gun, and it is illegal to knowingly sell a gun to a prohibited person. This will obviously not stop two criminals from buying and selling guns. But if I want to sell a deer rifle to my law-abiding friend, we now have to both take the time to drive to a dealer during business hours and pay whatever they ask to do a background check. How does this make Vermont safer? Again, we'd love to hear your thoughts now that this legislation has passed and you've had a few days to reflect on it. What does it mean to you? And where do you go from here? Peter Trombley is a senior at Champlain Valley Union High School. He's also a member of the Student Justice Committee there, a group formed around the March for Our Lives student protests on gun violence. And he helped organize the local student walkout at CVU in March and the student bus trip to D.C. to take part in the National March. He joins us on the line now. Peter, it's nice to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So just tell me briefly how you feel about Vermont's new gun laws.
Well, you know, I'm incredibly proud of our state for being one of the first to pass new gun laws. I think that these gun laws are a great first step towards making a safer community, and I applaud Governor Scott's bravery in this area.
When did you first start to think about Vermont's gun laws and your perspective on them? Was it just recently?
Well, I've always known that Vermont had fairly lax gun laws, but it never felt like a significant issue to me because Vermont had never, in my lifetime, experienced a lot of gun violence. But when Parkland happened, when the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School occurred, I was reading an interview with one of the mothers of the victims, and she had always told her daughter that they lived in the kind of place where that would never happen. And then Fairhaven happened, and those two things woke me up to the fact that this can happen anywhere. And so Vermont needed stronger gun laws.
What's the conversation like at CVU now around this topic?
Well, the conversation at CBU has been mostly focused around school shootings and those kind of mass shootings, and less around suicides and criminal gun violence and that kind of thing, domestic gun violence. So it's obviously been focusing around what is affecting school students the most. And I think that for the most part, a lot of students want something to be done, but not all students really agree on what that is.
I'm sure there are some students who also don't want anything to be done. Are their voices being drowned out, do you think, or are they part of the conversation, at least at CVU?
I certainly don't think they've been drowned out. In fact, I mean, I feel like all students want something done, you know, whether that's gun control or not is another question. You know, there have been definitely prominent voices on the side against gun control. Ethan Duncan is a student here at CBU who has written, I believe, two op-eds now that have been in the news about why he thinks that there are other things you can do that are ultimately better than gun control, such as increasing school security. So I think that both sides of the debate have been vocal.
So, Peter, what do you think these new laws will do? What difference do you think any of them will make at school in terms of the risk that you may or may not feel as a student when you go to school?
Well, I hope that particularly, I believe it's F-55, the one that deals with universal background checks and magazine bans and bump stock bans. I do believe those are kind of directly targeted at mass shootings, because high capacity magazines and bump stocks are the two things that make assault rifles lethal enough to have these mass shootings and have them be so deadly. So I think that in particular is important when we talk about school shootings, and that in particular is a bill that makes me feel somewhat safer. But I'm also quite happy about those red flag laws, because I think that, you know, again, as you mentioned earlier, domestic abuse with firearms is a huge issue. And so hopefully this will cut down on deaths and household due to that.
Yeah, domestic violence and certainly suicide, another very high area where gun violence in Vermont takes place. Peter, do you think these laws go far enough? Will you be advocating for more, or is this the end of your advocacy on this issue?
I will certainly advocate for more. I do not think these laws go far enough. To a certain degree, there isn't much that can be done at the state level. Universal background checks on the federal level need to be implemented better, and the NICS system has, you know, a lot of issues right now that really need to be resolved, and some of those things can't really happen on the Vermont state level. But I certainly think we can take more steps towards reducing the number of deaths by suicide of guns. You know, I believe the success rate of suicides of a gun is 90%, which is significantly higher than the success for suicide rates with using, you know, knives, razor blades, or any other overdose, any other method. So I think that we can do more to making sure that those who perhaps don't have that kind of mental illness but are contemplating suicide don't have access to these kinds of weapons. So I think there's definitely more steps that we can take in the future.
Well, Peter, I appreciate you being on the show today and sharing your perspective. Thanks, and good luck in your future.
All right. Thank you, Jane.
Peter Trombley is a senior at Champlain Valley Union High School, and as I mentioned, he's also a member of the Student Justice Committee, a group that formed around the March for Our Lives student protests on gun violence. We're gauging reaction to the new gun bills that have just been signed into law here in Vermont. What's your take? Do you see these as progress, a legislative overreach? Do you anticipate seeing any difference in your life because these laws are now in effect? 1-800-639-2211 is the number you can call. You can also post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Jonathan, who's calling in from St. Albans. Hi, Jonathan. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've just been really curious about something. I know that Governor Scott claimed that his change of heart on gun laws came about when there was a threat on one of the local Vermont schools. The kid was arrested, but to my understanding, they've released him. I'm not sure if he's been released on bail or if he's been released because of a lack of evidence. But, I mean, if this kid was such a threat that they had to pass new gun laws in order to keep us safe, then why is this kid out walking around? How is that justifiable?
Well, Jonathan, I would encourage you actually to read Nina Keck's story on VPR that just happened on Friday, talking about the extent of Vermont's laws in relation to when somebody can be charged with a crime that hasn't been committed. So what constitutes a crime if it is in the planning stages, and what constitutes not a crime in that sense. But to the gun laws, I have a question for you, Jonathan. One of the new laws, an extreme risk protection order that can be given by a judge, was actually instituted in this case. And so the alleged perpetrator of this plot is no longer allowed to have possession of his guns right now during this trial stage. Does that seem like an effective use of the law to you, Jonathan?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, if you were caught in the planning stage of a crime, if he was even telling people that he was going to shoot up other students, he has no business having firearms. I totally agree with that.
Well, Jonathan, I appreciate your perspective and your calling, and this will help us get into our next guest here as we talk about what our reactions are to these gun laws in Vermont, what difference they might make. Chris Bradley is president of the Vermont Federation of Sportsmen's Clubs, which worked with lawmakers on some measures related to guns, but now ultimately opposes all three of Vermont's gun control bills that have passed. Chris is on the line with us now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
So let me ask you first the same question that I asked our previous guest. What do you think about these laws? What's your reaction?
Well, going one at a time, bump stock a bill. As we know, the federal government is already moving towards making these instruments illegal. And I note that when they do so, the federal government is likely to make this a felony making of an illegal machine gun, as opposed to the state law that simply made it a misdemeanor. So I set the bump stock bill immediately aside because a federal solution here is preferable to a state-by-state solution. Going next to S-221, the Extreme Risk Protection Order, I'd like to jump back really quickly just to where we were just before town meeting. And at that point in time, all parties had worked very closely with Senate Judiciary to try to find a path through for the Extreme Risk Protection Order that might be favorable to all parties. The S-221, as it left Senate Judiciary, we worked exceptionally hard on. And in fact, this is the type of bill that we never saw really as a gun confiscation bill. We saw this as a public safety bill, pure and simple. And I were pleased to see that it is actually 221 that is probably going to be of some use with the Fairhaven incident. That said, the version we supported was the version that passed unanimously out of the Senate prior to town meeting, on a vote of 30-0 with all senators in agreement and the three major gun groups in agreement. At the end of the day, we looked at this bill and said that there are people that should not have or be able to possess weapons. That was the stance that basically we all parties took, and the rest was how to provide due process around that so that we could accomplish a bill that actually was on point but was still balanced against constitutional rights.
And, Chris, I'm going to move you forward here, but you no longer support the legislation as it has gone through to the governor's signature.
Unfortunately, the bill changed as it left Senate Judiciary, so no, we do not support 221. The core bill, S-55, we always supported. That gave the state an outlet for handling these abandoned and confiscated firearms. Perhaps the most egregious to us is the magazine ban.
Right. Now this limits the rounds in magazines to 10 and 15, depending on whether it's a long gun or a handgun. And can I ask you, Chris, as a firearm owner yourself, how does this actually affect you? How is this going to affect the way you use your firearms?
Well, quite simply, I hope I never have to use my firearms in a defensive situation where I'm the subject of a home invasion or otherwise being attacked. I think one way to look at what happened with the magazine ban is that we are attempting to control the actions of attackers by passing laws that defenders have to adhere to. The simple fact of the matter is when somebody breaks into your house, they're doing it on when they feel it's the best time. And probably that's going to be the worst time for anybody to be able to defend themselves, because it's going to be in the middle of the night. It's going to be dark, or it's going to be at the preference of the attacker.
And you think having a 30-round magazine would make a difference in that kind of situation as opposed to a 10-round magazine?
I think more than 10 rounds is... I think the 10 rounds is completely arbitrary. And we're attempting, as I said, to control what a defender can do by attempting to control the attacker. And by the way, every law enforcement officer that spoke to the mag ban was very clear. Even the deputy district attorney said that there is no way the mag ban can be enforced. So what is the purpose of passing a law that can't be enforced? Yes, I will concede that theoretically in storefronts that as of October 1, you're not going to be able to buy one of these high-capacity magazines. But I can keep all the ones I have. Everybody can keep what they have. They can loan them back and forth. There's nothing restricting that. What I do see as being of grave concern is, okay, fine, this generation can keep everything they have. What happens to the next generation and the generation after? At some point, we're going to see a restriction on their rights to be able to defend themselves. And 10 and 15 rounds is completely arbitrary. There's no scientific or evidence that says this is the magic number to stop a mass killing.
Chris, the crowd at the signing of these bills was vociferous. We heard a little bit of a clip of Phil Scott talking at the beginning of the show. Both opponents and supporters of the legislation were very vocal and very loud, but some people said that the opponents of these gun bills were fairly menacing. And I'm wondering how you felt about what appeared to many people like intimidation from the side of the legislation that you're on.
Well, I think you have to take a look at the trajectory of all these bills. And frankly, when you're attempting to pass legislation in 3 weeks, which is what the House did, we don't see that as a terribly deliberative process. Things like the age change, which is affecting tens of thousands of Vermonters, never was given the benefit of a public hearing whatsoever. We were never able to hear from those people that were going to be directly affected concerning what they thought of this law. This was just passed. So there are individuals that feel that their voices were never heard, that we were contacting via email to the point where we basically broke the email system. We were contacting through the Sergeant of Arms until that overwhelmed the Sergeant of Arms office. So there's a distinct feeling amongst many that these are constitutional issues that were not properly deliberated. I don't think 3 weeks gives ample time to really consider all points of view when we're passing through legislation.
Are you planning to sue to get any of these laws overturned?
There is litigation being considered, yes.
Considered or, I mean, that sounds pretty unclear, but it sounded to me like there are people who are certainly going to try to press to have this legislation overturned.
Yes, we are certainly moving ahead with litigation.
Well, Chris Bradley, I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today. Chris Bradley is president of the Vermont Federation of Sportsmen's Clubs. Thank you very much for sharing your perspective.
Thank you very much.
We're talking today about gun legislation that has passed, that is in law. Some of them go into effect in the future. Some are immediately in effect. And we're getting reactions from those of you who have been thinking about this and have feelings on it on many different sides of the issue. Blake says, as a hunter, fly fisher, and nature lover, I appreciate being able to enjoy the outdoors and do it responsibly. The need for semi-automatic and military assault weapons escapes me. I fired expert rounds in many such weapons when in the service. The choice for sporting weapons could come from a different quiver. I have fired old flintlocks. I've collected old weapons. I fail to see the need for an assault weapon and military magazines. Kelly says, this law does not affect me that much in terms of ownership. That said, I believe it has caused a deeper divide to our belief in the democratic process. I wrote to the governor and joined a group of law-abiding gun owners that protested. While I think it's good to have a person that can change their mind in light of reports, I believe this has caused deep concern for the process itself. Tim says, as a gun owner in Vermont, I feel like I've been criminalized, vilified, demonized, and worst of all, marginalized by S-55 and our government, especially our governor. I own multiple semi-automatic handguns and rifles, which are affected by S-55. Yes, I have AR-15s. Yes, I actually do use them for deer hunting and predator control on my farm. I obviously have very different values, beliefs, and priorities than some folks do, but that doesn't mean that I'm a bad person, just different. S-55 was introduced under under the guise of school safety, but there's nothing within these laws that will keep the Adam Lanzas and the Nicholas Cruises of the world from coming to your school and hurting your children. Our government should have focused on identifying and stopping potential attackers, beefing up security at schools, and adding these deranged individuals to the NICS system early, among other things. Well, let's get another perspective here. Clay Lasher Summers is executive director of GunSense VT, a gun control advocacy group, and she's on the line with us now. Hi, Clay. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So you support these bills, and your group has been pushing for gun legislation and more restrictions for several years now with not much success. So did the abrupt change of position by Governor Phil Scott come as a surprise to you?
It came as a surprise, but knowing what he had seen, it didn't come as a surprise.
Meaning what? Reading the affidavit related to the alleged plot at Fairhaven Union?
Right, right. I mean, it showed him that these things could happen in Vermont and that, you know, states aren't really immune from these kinds of things happening. And it's not a matter of it hasn't happened, but when it could happen.
So how did GunSense VT work on these issues once the governor expressed his change of position and these bills started moving forward much more quickly?
Well, I think that we were working on things before he changed his mind. In fact, the background check bill had been worked on in one form or another 3 years ago. And so what happened for us is we started getting involved at the beginning of the session with Senate Bill 221 and then House Bill 422 and then when Senate Bill 55 went to the floor. And we did it just like any other grassroots organization does. We found our supporters and we tried to get them to the State House. There was a public hearing on January 30th where both sides and anyone could talk about how they felt about new gun safety bills. So we were there from the beginning. So it didn't really change how we did anything.
Well, it must have changed how you did things because, you know, some of these, some of this legislation we'd even talked about at the beginning of this session, this half of the session, were set to languish in committee and not get out of committee. And so there was a lot more momentum, certainly, for them once the governor announced his change of position and once things became public in this case of an alleged plot at Fairhaven Union High School. So things must have changed.
Well, they did change in the pace in which it happened.
Right. And that must have changed your strategy a little bit.
Yes, we had to focus on all three bills. So, and that's what we did.
Clay, you were at the signing, and I mentioned this a couple times now, and it appeared very tense. It was full of emotion. There were some people who felt really kind of scared at that. What did it feel like to you?
Well, I didn't like it at all. It felt, you know, the opposition, there's people really, really, really angry. And next to me, there was somebody who was, you know, threatening and calling the governor names and swearing. And it felt, it didn't feel good. And I know that I saw three young families leave. Who felt, you know, they were upset. And I think one of the things that the governor has talked about is civility. You know, and I can understand how the opposition can feel, but I try not to be uncivil. Mm. And no matter how I feel about a public official, I've never done anything like that, taunting them, calling him a traitor. I mean, those things aren't... they don't help the conversation.
Now that these three bills have passed into law, is there more that you still want to do in terms of firearms restrictions and regulations in Vermont?
Well, I don't think it's a time for that right now. I don't think that we've even thought of that. I think, you know, there's definitely some things at the federal level that could be done. And we might work on some of those things, but our sights are not set on any new gun bills at the moment, no.
Clay, you don't live in Vermont. You grew up here and you own property in Vermont, but you live in New Hampshire. So why are you advocating for change here?
Well, I am a Vermonter. I was born in Bellows Falls. I lived in West Brattleboro until I was a teenager. Most of my adult life and my children's life every summer has been spent in Vermont in one place or another. I have family that lives in the Northeast Kingdom, and I was given farmland right across the border from Brattleboro on the Connecticut River. And I never would have been given farmland. You know, nobody gave me farmland anywhere else. So I have a small organic farm here. And part of the mission of the farm is, you know, to grow food. I sell the food at the Brattleboro Farmers Market. But really, I speak for thousands of Vermonters who believe that, you know, these gun sense bills make perfect sense. And I think that, you know, there's the extreme gun owners who want to divide us into groups. And I don't want to do that. I'm a gun violence survivor. And, you know, I was shot in the house right on the Connecticut River looking at Putney, Vermont. And, you know, I will move back to Vermont when I stop farming. So I have a lot of investment in having Vermont become a safer state. And I love Vermont.
Well, Clay Lasher-Summers is executive director of Gun Sense VT. It's a gun control advocacy group. Clay, thank you very much for talking with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let's go to Peggy, who's calling in from Williston. Hi, Peggy. Your reactions to these new
gun morning.
Laws.
I'll make this quick. I own two guns. I used to be a hunter. Haven't hunted much lately. I've been busy with other things. But I'm all in favor of this this new gun law. I don't think anybody needs 30 or 40-round magazines. I mean, if they're going to be out in the market, then criminals are going to get a hold of them, too. And I'll tell you a little quick story, because I know your time is limited. My husband had passed away, and it was in the fall. It was midnight, and I was awakened by two men talking in my kitchen. I grabbed my .38 cocked it, and I said, if I'm going to die, I'm taking somebody with me. Got out into the kitchen, and it turned out that I'd accidentally, when I set the clock back, I triggered my my Sony. So I pretty near lost my Sony. But, I mean, there's people like me who protect themselves. We don't want to go up against a criminal with a 30-round magazine. And I just think this is bogus, this argument. I'm very much in favor of this, even though I own two guns. Thanks a bunch.
Peggy, thanks for your comments. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's get another one in here from Adam in Morrisville. Hi, Adam. What are you thinking?
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say that the gun bill goes too far, because it was kind of pushed upon us, and we could have taken this time and used the time to get our mental health in order, because 2/3 of the suicides in Vermont are caused by gun deaths. And we could have eliminated those and then been a safer state if we were to use the time and the money that we used towards this bill for that, which would have been smarter, because eliminating the gun capacity magazines, it really doesn't do anything, because, like the police have said, it can't be enforced. You can buy them in other states. The only way that that would change is if it was on the federal level.
Well, Adam, I appreciate your perspective and what you see as a lack of real effectiveness in these gun bills. Let's get one more in here from Bill in Morristown. Hi, Bill. What are you thinking?
Hi, I'm afraid Loyal County is being overrepresented. I wanted to say that I wish that all those folks who speak on these issues, particularly the media, and you're excused for this, stop referring to S221 as a gun control bill. It is a law enforcement tool developed through a deliberative process through the Senate Judiciary Committee, of which I was a participant. It is not a gun control bill, and I will tell you why. Because gun control bills are blanket restrictions, a form of prior restraint, to use the First Amendment type of language, a type of prior restraint on an individual right. S221 doesn't do that. It specifies it only deals with one individual at a time who's a threat to themselves or others. S55, on the other hand, is a gun control bill for the simple fact that it restricts the lawful choices of lawful gun owners to choose which weapons, which magazines, which methods by which they're going to exercise their right to self-defense. And I want to add one more point. This is very important. Speaker Johnson, and Clay just repeated it, and I give her credit for maybe not understanding, because she wasn't there a lot. I was. Speaker Johnson and others have testified repeatedly that the January 30th hearing was a hearing on these bills. These bills barely existed. S-55 didn't exist on January 30th. That public hearing doesn't count. Speaker Johnson refused to allow us a public hearing. The people in the House who voted against Paul Porter's amendment to allow two more weeks for a public hearing on S-55 all denied Vermonters the right to a public hearing on the bill.
Well, Bill, and I hear you. You're among the people today saying this didn't feel like it went through the right deliberative process. And so part of the anger towards this legislation is about that as much as it is about the actual content of the bills and this thinking that the content might have changed had there been more open deliberation. Bill, we're short on time, so I want to make sure that we get more comments in here. Max in Winooski says the prohibitions in these laws are of the same sort of irrational fear that drives anti-vaccination and anti-immigration sentiments. It's deeply troubling that our legislators have so readily enacted laws without clear factual indication of their necessity and efficacy. The support for some of these laws are an indication that gun owners in Vermont are in favor of sensible measures, and S-55 is not a sensible measure. John in Montpelier says, I'm all in favor of what was passed and appreciate the courage of all, especially the governor, for doing it. We need to go further. I'd like to see non-hunting rifles defined tightly and limited to being stored and used at certified gun ranges. Also, a voluntary buyback program for anything other than hunting rifles. And Robert in Brattleboro says, I am a gun owner, hunter, and veteran. I'm pleased that Governor Scott signed the new gun laws, but I believe these regulations do not go far enough. We need to ban assault weapons in the hands of civilians altogether. Then again, Skip says, these new laws say to me that I am not trusted by the folks in Montpelier who expect to be trusted by me. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights were put in place to protect us from governments that put themselves ahead of the people. What's your perspective? 1-800-639-2211. And let's turn now to Senator Dick Sears, longtime state senator and one of the sponsors of S-55, one of the gun bills that passed this session. This is the one that raises the age to purchase a gun, requires background checks for most private sales, bans bump stocks, and limits magazine capacity to 10 rounds for long guns and 15 rounds for pistols. Senator Sears, nice to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to clarify, I may be the sponsor of S-55, but I didn't support the final version of S-55.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Why not?
It started out as a bill to deal with gun storage, which is a problem in the state of Vermont. That's probably take longer to explain than we have time. But once the background checks and other provisions were added to the bill, I could no longer support the bill. And because it part of the reason is it criminalizes certain behaviors that have been going on for a long time, but I also think in criminalizing those behaviors, they've left themselves with, particularly on the magazines, with some real problems of enforcement. And when I heard from the Attorney General's office in the Senate Judiciary Committee, as well as the law enforcement, and then the state's attorneys, all with concerns about enforcing the law regarding the magazine size. The normal course of events in Montpelier is when you have something added by the other body, you normally have a conference committee. In this case, I sponsored an amendment to take the magazines off and was defeated, and then they went ahead and agreed with the House's action. So there was never really a good debate on the magazines in the Senate. My committee never dealt with that issue. Was added on in the House. The debate took place there. And that's just not the normal course that we take. And so for that reason, I voted against the final bill. I also had problems with the magazines to begin, with the background checks, the way it was set up. And, when you criminalize behavior, you're talking about normal Vermonters who now, if I sell a gun to my neighbor, that would be and I don't go through a background check, that's a one-year criminal penalty up to a year in jail. And was that what the legislature really intended? We never had that good discussion about that.
And my understanding of why your name is not removed from the sponsorship on S-55 is because it would have triggered a whole new process and really sort of created havoc in moving
that bill. There would have been a vote on whether to allow me to withdraw the bill. And I would have needed 16 senators to vote to allow me to withdraw the bill. That wasn't going to be in the cards. But it also would have caused a complete breakdown in the whole process. So I decided not to go with what many would consider a kind of a nuclear option, which would have blown up the bill itself. And
Senator Sears, let me ask you, do you oppose these new measures because you think they are bad policy or simply because you think they are unenforceable? In other words, do you think that there shouldn't be these restrictions on magazine capacity or do you oppose them just on the grounds that this is a law that is in many ways going to be very difficult to enforce?
Yeah, and then that's the magazines, I don't think, has been well thought out. When you amend something five times on the House floor on the last day of debate, it tells me they haven't got it right. And when you say something is very dangerous and you want to ban it and you want to ban the possession or the purchase in the future in Vermont of magazines over a certain limit, but then you say, well, it's okay to manufacture these magazines in Vermont and sell them to people in New Hampshire or any other state that allows them. And I realize that some of the magazines are made for the military and law enforcement purposes, but others are made for general sale. So we're saying to other states, hey, we can't purchase them here in Vermont, but it's okay to sell them. To me, that's rather hypocritical. And so there were a lot of things in that bill that, again, my committee never had a chance to really discuss, never had a chance to look at, and we feel that it was rushed.
Well, that's Senator Dick Sears. Thank you very much for talking with us today about your position.
Welcome.
I appreciate it. Listeners, we're talking today about reactions that people are having around the state to these new measures that have been signed into law that deal with firearm restrictions. Raquel says, I'm proud that Vermont is once again helping lead the nation with sensible gun laws that should be implemented nationwide. We are not immune to gun violence even with these laws, but they are steps in the right direction. And let's talk now with Seth Chase. Seth is a lifelong gun owner and a U.S. Army and Vermont Army National Guard vet. He was one of the guests on our roundtable of gun owners who joined us before these bills passed through the legislature, and he's on the line with us now. Seth, nice to talk with you again.
Yes, ma'am. Nice to talk to you, too.
So what do you think of the new legislation?
I'm not super excited about them. I think H-422 and S-221 are probably the least offensive. They appear to follow due process if they're enforced fairly and honestly. They do appear to provide a means to contest actions that are taken under them. So, I'm certainly not a lawyer or anything, so I'll leave that up to other folks. But S-55 has definitely got the most glitches in it, as the senator before me mentioned.
And do you oppose S-55 because you think it will be ineffective or difficult to enforce, or do you oppose it for Second Amendment reasons?
Yes.
All of the above.
Yeah. As previous callers have said, the background checks, it seems reasonable on the surface, but it's almost unenforceable unless you start spending huge amounts of tax dollars on, sting operations and registries, trying to bait people into breaking the law just so you can arrest them and then scare everybody else.
Or unless you create a national registry at some point. Is that where you think this may be going?
Having observed politics, I don't think it's terribly likely that that would transpire, but I have no doubt that some folks would like to initiate such a thing. With the age restrictions, you've got thousands of Vermonters who just saw the goalposts moved on them. If it was some sort of a delayed enactment or something like that, or we had some sort of a comprehensive definition of what it means to be an adult, like for voting, for drinking, for smoking, for buying firearms, for joining the military, and it was kind of comprehensive across the board, based on the science of, brain development and so on, then that might make sense. But to just kind of boost it up just out of the blue is kind of a lousy thing to do, especially for folks who may have been just planning on, buying themselves a new hunting rifle next year.
But Seth, I've taken hunter safety. It's a one-day course. Is it that onerous, really?
I don't know. I mean, that's a tricky sort of conversation, but having not included the people that would be affected by it in the discussion is kind of not a terribly nice thing to do to folks,
We heard from the Federation of Sportsmen's Clubs that that they are planning to move ahead with a challenge to S-55 and to these new laws. Would you join a lawsuit that challenges these gun laws?
To be honest, I don't know if I'd know how. I would probably support a challenge to 55. I don't know that I would support a challenge to the other two. I'd have to probably leave that in the hands of the ACLU and so forth to make sure that, if they vet those two, then I'd probably allow them to be the experts on it. But, yeah, I'd probably support a action against 55.
We're also hearing from some of the most vocal opponents of these gun laws that they're going to work to make sure that Governor Phil Scott does not return to the governor's seat. Do you think that enough people care enough to try to unseat him?
People as a whole tend to hold grudges more than they remember favors, So I think if we look at the state as a whole, we're going to see an awful lot of folks that tend to fall on the Republican side who are going to remember this next time that the election comes around. And we're going to see an awful lot of folks that tend to fall on the Democratic side not remember this. They'll remember, positions on drug, marijuana enforcement, education, taxes, that sort of thing. So I almost feel like Governor Scott has kind of lost his base, but not exactly won new allies.
Well, we'll have to see what happens in that case. But Seth, I really appreciate you sharing your perspective with us yet again here as we talk about gun restrictions. Thank you.
Glad to help.
Seth Chase is a lifelong gun owner. A couple more comments here before we leave this conversation. Greg in Burlington suggests a good gun owner program, he says, to address the concerns of those gun advocates who are troubled by having to jump through hoops if they want to buy and sell guns. I would suggest the legislature and the governor investigate the development of a program much like the Global Entry or Trusted Traveler programs used for international air travel. I use these programs showing that I'm a responsible U.S. citizen that obeys the laws and facilitates border crossings without any red tape was a fair trade-off. A program such as a trusted gun owner would demonstrate to gun owners that they are respected and trusted. Richard, though, says, I am disappointed in the speed in which these bills passed. In my 80-plus years, I've enjoyed hunting in Vermont and other states. My weapons aren't semi-automatic, but do require magazines that can hold a large number of bullets. I can see gun opponents now feeling free to introduce other restrictions, which eventually will result in no one being able to own a rifle or a pistol. Well, I appreciate everybody for sharing their perspectives on this program. More to come as we talk about these laws as they go into effect.